Do you do that? Do you talk to yourself out loud? You seem like you would, Kathy.
I do constantly. Do you? I do. I also give myself pep talks. I do everything.
Oh, I do the opposite. I abuse myself out loud.
Really? That's funny. Really? You say things like, what the hell did you do, Fletcher?
Yeah. Jesus Christ, Fletcher.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I do the, I go, great job, KP. I swear to God.
That's good. I like that.
What about you, Ross? Do you talk to yourself and give yourself either pep talks or
oh, yeah, chides? All the time. All
pep talks or chiding? Which one?
Mostly it's sort of observational. Boy, you're really...
You're right. This is fascinating. Three different things.
No, I do like, you know, I mean, like, wow, that was really interesting. Or wow, you're really tired. Or wow, that's a great book you just found. I should do that.
Yeah.
From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk a little more about the technical uses of words. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey, Kathy. Hey, Ross. We'll jump off with a listener email about one of our favorite topics, unnecessary words.
So we got an email from Jim in Mississippi.
Hi, Jim.
Who told us about a very interesting new word, or he called it a wacky new word, actually. It said, this is the quote, according to information from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety and the Highway Loss Data Institute, converting just 10% of the nation's signalized intersections to roundabouts could have prevented blah, 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 blah. So then he said, signalized?
Before we start on that, I have a confession to make. Kath and I talked about this email, and that day I went to the library, and we're getting a huge new book donation in, and we had to negotiate what movers are going to use it. And I was talking with the guy who's in charge of that sort of thing, and we were both discussing, should we make sure the movers palletize the book collection?
Ross, you are no longer my brother.
And I used it very confidently, and I didn't think about it. And then when I went home, I thought, oh my God. However, Kathy that day and just recently used the word signage.
Oh, signage.
I did.
Yes, you did.
I heard signage.
I noted it, and I said, I'm not going to tell you until we get on the show. You used the word signage in a conversation.
Oh, I hang my head in shame. In shame.
So let's move on to fancified or serious-ized.
Let's not move on so quickly from signalized, though. What do you think about that in this exact context? I mean, they're talking about intersections with signals, intersections that have had traffic signals installed there.
Right.
I mean, you could say converting just 10% of the nation's intersections with signals to roundabouts, but signalized intersections, I mean, you know what it means, and it gets that, you know, that distinction out of the way quickly, and it doesn't make
it has traffic control signals. Yeah.
I'm going to defend it on the same notion in the same way I used palletize the other day.
Mm-hmm.
My initial reaction to reading this was, you're right, Jim. This is a terrible word. After I used palletize, and I really honestly don't want to just defend myself, I think it's in a way it's jargon for people who are distinctly using these words for like a technical or quasi-technical purpose. But I think it's valid. I think it's quicker, easier, and faster to say signalized or, for that matter, palletized than we're going to use pallets. We're palletizing this shipment.
I actually agree with both of you. I'm just looking up the etymologically. Signalized was first used in the 1650s, not in terms of installing traffic signals, believe it or not, but to render conspicuous. And 1702, make known. And 1961 is when it began as provide with traffic signals.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I agree with both of you. When I first saw Jim's email, I thought, oh my God, Signalize, for God's sake, just stop it, stop it, stop it. But yeah, I mean, I gotta say, it says it more quickly. It communicates exactly what they're talking about. Yeah, I really don't have a problem with it ultimately.
In this particular sentence, I think trying another way to say it would make the sentence more awkward, not less awkward.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think so too.
I mean, I wouldn't go around saying this in my casual conversation, but I don't think it doesn't work.
No, yeah. I think it has a slightly more technical, you know, we're traffic control experts usage there. I think that's where it's particularly useful, I think.
Yeah. Because how else, as Fletcher just said, the other way of saying it gets all clunky now.
Right.
Signage, though, I have a problem with still.
Yeah, okay.
Even though I used it.
Yeah, signage, I'm trying to think of a situation where you might actually want to say signage instead of just signs. I don't like signage either.
Mm-mm. That's why I'm upset that Ross says I used it.
No, you used it very confidently, though, which is really interesting.
And that makes all the difference, Kathy.
No, but kidding aside, I really think, I mean, she used it in a way that I only noticed that she used it because we were thinking about it. Like, for example, I just looked online. Here's something where I really wonder. The clear signage at the airport ensures that travelers can easily find their departure gates. Actually, I think it was talking about Barcelona, actually, as you said it, Kathy.
Oh, Barcelona good God. Airport. No, not Barcelona.
So you could say the clear signs at the airport ensure.
Yeah.
But there's a slight, yeah. There's a slight difference.
Yeah, because I think signage is supposed to be the collection of all of
yes,
in effect.
Uh-huh. It is.
The system of signs within the airport.
Right.
Which, let me tell you, were not clear. But that's beside the point.
Yeah.
Whereas signs is just signs. It's not like a quote curated, if you will, collection.
Oh God.
I actually agree with you there. You're saying the clear signage means that the airport basically has, like, as a bureaucratic idea, signs have to be clear. The clear signs at the airport implies to me a little bit less overriding idea of signs.
Yeah, it's just like a bunch of signs as opposed to like a theory.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, we're on to something here, kids. Okay, messaging. This was when we started looking for words that, like, people thought were, like, annoying and modern.
Mm.
And messaging was one. Mm. As messaging, as in the PR marketing kind of
context. Your company's messaging, like
the overarching
message you're getting out there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what about our messaging? What's wrong with our messaging?
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think of that one?
As a, I don't think it's terrible if you are in that world using it. That one doesn't feel, you know, there are words that feel like you're using them because everybody else is using them. Solutions. I've talked about solutions a lot. Your drapery solutions or whatever. Messaging, I think, is useful as a shorthand when you are in that world. Again, you know, you're not going to go around saying that to your buddy on the street. But
for the technical term, I think you're right.
If you're talking about what your company is sending out, the message that we are sending, our messaging, how we're doing it, what we're saying. Yeah, I think that's
yeah.
Okay.
Let's read a sentence and see, because I was wondering if we could change it, and I don't think we can without changing the meaning. The political campaign completely revamped its messaging to appeal to young voters.
Yeah.
Revamped its message is different because it implies like a sort of static thing. This involves like a dynamic, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's a different kind of term.
I think that's well put, Ross.
It's more than just the message. It's also how you're getting the message out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's also a good, I think both of you are absolutely right. I was surprised because this was on so many lists of useless new usages, and I don't really have a problem because I think it's got a specific job out there, the term. I do. I don't really have a problem with it.
I'm trying to think, you couldn't replace it with communication because that doesn't necessarily change what the message is. If you're changing your messaging, it seems to me that you're changing both, or possibly changing both, how something is delivered and what the actual message is. You could be changing the entire thing.
There's also something very tactile about it to me, more so than something like communication.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Along the same lines, what about branding? Not for cattle. Not for cows. We're talking.
I have no problem with it.
It's hard. So what I want to try to do is separate the word from the entire world we live in right now. I mean, everything is branding, right? But that's not necessarily the fault of the word. It's the fault. It's mm-mm. our fault for commodifying everything and trying to sell everything all the time. So is the word itself unnecessary or bad? Let's think about that.
I don't mind it.
I hate the word because what's like, as Fletcher said, the idea behind the word, I don't like. But the word itself, I think, is precisely does its job. So I don't think it's bad.
It was first used in the sense that we're talking about in 1850. It's not something which I would have thought that arose in the 50s or something. I don't know why, but the 50s. But yeah, no, I agree. I have no problem with it. I mean, it's what it is.
Yeah, I think it's okay. I mean, it's unfortunate, everything that comes along with it, but... I mean, as the word, without all of the extra baggage, and you know, maybe, I mean, I'm not trying to separate it in the larger sense, like it's all terrible, but just the word itself, I think it's okay.
That reminds me, a long time ago, we were trying to do an ad campaign for the library, and we did, like, you know, come to the library for doing this, and this was at the University of St. Michael's College, but St. Michael's College is part of the University of Toronto, and it's now a university. So they wouldn't let, they said, you have to like make it, you know, we're doing branding now. You have to do good branding. So the thing, they had a new logo, which they got rid of. It was something like University of St. Michael's College at the University of Toronto, which was about the most confusing logo I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And that's the dangers of branding, I think, when you get too going on it.
I just want to say, I found the term, which I'd never heard before, sonic branding. Do you guys know that? It's using music and sound mm-hmm. to help brands engage with their audiences. But then you can't confuse that with a sonic logo.
Come on.
Sonic logo is the short form expression of a brand's sonic identity.
Oh, that's terrible.
I don't think they're doing a good job of solutioning.
Yeah, thank you, Ross.
Now, that word I hate.
Solutions?
Solutioning.
Wait, that's a real word? You solution something?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Solutioning.
That's even... Oh, that is useless. Come on.
No.
Yeah, I've never heard that. I instantly hate it.
Well, so, but in fairness, that when I dug into it, it actually is an IT... It is now becoming a more into the broader corporate world. Mm-hmm. But in IT... A piece of software is often referred to as a solution among developers. So solutioning, in fairness to this very small world, or large world, but one that I'm certainly not. So the solutioning makes sense in that context, I think. But I don't like the bleed through to the rest of the world.
No, I hate the bleed through. And I really hate this. I'm going to throw this one out. Architecting, which you came up with too. Now that one is too much.
Architecting. What does it mean to architect something? Just to
design
and build it?
Yeah.
But again, I'm going to be in IT. It was the process of doing it. So, I mean, it and it's within the architect. It's not like I'm an architect. I'm designing a building. I go, yeah, I can't make it for drinks tonight. I'm architecting all night. You know.
Although, also, I'm going to throw in, and people can have horrible usages a long time ago. Even our greats. And Keats had a line, this was architected thus by the great Oceanus. And I think that was an off day for Keats on that one.
It was in a letter, though. Can you imagine getting a letter like that? It sounds like I wouldn't want to be his pal, you know? No. I mean, it just sounds like, oh, God, he's going on and on again, you know?
Okay, but speaking, let's go backwards to business again and go away from Keats. What do you think of ideate?
Now, when you ideate something, do you just, what are you doing? What are you doing when you ideate?
You're generating new ideas.
Yeah. I mean,
usually through brainstorming.
I was going to say, don't we call that brainstorming?
We used to.
Yeah. Now we call it ideating.
But in the 1600s. It was in the dictionary as ideate.
Oh, you mean they
coming up with ideas?
They didn't have brainstorming in the 1600s? You know, I mean, this is one of those things where we're just used to brainstorming. I mean, when you think about it, brainstorming is a really stupid term, but we're used to it. And we all know what that mm-hmm. means, and everybody uses it. And so I now, of course, have no problem with brainstorming. You know, brainstorming has been a thing for as long as I can remember. Ideating hasn't. So
also, brainstorming has like some sort of verve. Ideate just makes you want to punch someone in the nose, doesn't it?
Does.
They're going
it
like, yeah, let's sit around and ideate right now. It's
terrible.
Like, not me.
No, I don't like it either.
I'm going to go talk to Keats. I just wanted to quickly, these are just two quibbles of mine, if you don't mind, Ross, that I just want to do. These are two pet peeves when I think people are over-fancifying. It's minor, but cabinetry versus cabinets. This is one of those things I see in like different things. And they're very distinct terms. Cabinetry is a broader thing. It's the whole storage system. Cabinets are like, I put these cabinets up. Mm-hmm. And I always see people on in like groups talking about the cabinetry they put in their kitchen. And it's not. It's just they put kitchen cabinets up. They want to sound fancy.
Yeah,
you know
do.
What I mean? It's like that. And the other one we talked about a while back, I can't remember, one was this colorway versus color.
Oh, yeah.
That still drives me crazy. And I had some people write me specifically, friends, going, Kathy, colorway is a legitimate term in design. I have all these friends in design. And I said, I know, but I'm not talking about the colorway as a thing. I'm talking about when there's a thing saying, I got these sneakers. I love the colorway. They're red.
Right.
That's not, I mean, that's, you know, it's, no, that's a color. That's all. That I'm done with my, I'm stepping off my soapbox now.
What if you have sneakers that are red, white, and green? And then you go, I like the colors. But if you say the colorway in a way, you're talking about
colorway.
Oh, you colorway
could say, I like the colorway because that's the group of colors. That's legitimate.
Yeah. Okay. So you can say in a way, you know, I really like your room. The colorway is fabulous because the room isn't just green. The room is, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, I still think most people, unless they're in design, shouldn't say colorway, I think.
Yeah, it would be weird to me if somebody said they liked the colorway of my shoes.
Well, I didn't even know what it was until this episode.
Well, a lot of people do it. A lot of them are my friends because I got hammered.
Yeah. I never even think of colors usually in the sense of design, but I'm not Mr. Design, so. Okay, now we're going to go. Speaking of colorway, though, and misusage, or should it be considered misusage, we're going to do a couple more words that originally had a certain meaning and now have bled into the common speech, and we have to debate whether we should or not.
Oh, so this is like
son of fracture.
Yeah, this is like a week or two ago when we talked about fracture versus break. We talked about theory, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Can I bring
we're gonna throw a few.
Just really quickly, I got an email from Michael, who's a neuroscientist, says, here's a useful distinction between the use of these words in science, these words, hypothesis and prediction. We mentioned hypothesis briefly.
Right.
He says a hypothesis is an idea about how something works. A useful hypothesis is not only well-reasoned, but also testable by experiments. Okay, great. Our definition of prediction, let's see, is closer to a prediction accompanying a testable hypothesis. The prediction concerns the outcome of an experiment under the condition that the hypothesis is correct or incorrect. Okay. I'll spare you the nuances that arise when considering alternative hypotheses and combinations of predictions. Okay. Yeah.
Ooh, thank you.
He's a neuroscientist. You don't say, Michael. Thank you. No, that's great. He also went on to have a little pet peeve about the pronunciation of dissect. He said that it's totally fine for people outside of biology and biologists to say dissect, but he's not happy with that pronunciation. He says,
how does he pronounce it?
He says, dissect does not rhyme with bisect. I would discourage you from pronouncing it in the ways that you did.
That's clever.
And yeah, it goes
dissect?
On a bit. Yeah. Well, but he says he agrees with us that language isn't stationary and it evolves, and his rant is intended for biologists and biology adjacent fields, such as medicine. He does not want you biologists or doctors to say dissect. And you know what?
Wow.
Michael seems to be quite a high-profile neuroscientist, and so I will defer to him.
I'm definitely deferring. I'm not going to argue with a neuroscientist on his job.
Yep.
Although I have a few ideas on brain surgery. Maybe I'll throw them out today.
Anyway, thanks, Michael. We appreciate that email.
Okay, so now we're doing son of fracture, right?
Okay, yeah, Fletcher, we're going to throw one word out right now, crescendo, and we're going to read a sentence from F. Scott Fitzgerald, The Great Gatsby, which I'm sure you've read. We all read it in high school. And I wanted you to tell us, is this word used incorrectly? The caterwauling horns had reached a crescendo, and I turned away and cut across the lawn towards home.
I have a former life in music, so I do know that something does not reach a crescendo. The crescendo is the process.
Uh-huh!
It's getting crescendo.
Fletcher,
means
got it right.
Means get louder is what crescendo means.
Yep.
Correct.
Okay.
Would you guys think I'm not sure that I would really think anything if I read reach a crescendo somewhere. I mean we pretty much know what that means, right?
I have no problem with it. I mean, if I were a musician, maybe I would be a nitpicker like many have been apparently. I don't think it's bad. Fine. The next one is a word that, what's wrong here? We have not only failed to require that the IRS utilize only secure and reliable authentication methodologies, but we've also given it carte blanche. Methodology. What's wrong?
Well, I also want to register that I have a problem with utilize, but that's neither here nor there.
We appreciate that, too.
What's wrong with methodologies there? It probably, and I forgive me, I don't remember the entire sentence, probably because I got annoyed by utilize right away. But my guess is you could just say methods there. It's, you're not talking about the whole broad system of methods.
Exactly. You got it right. Methodology is a technical term meaning the analysis of methods,
not the methods
themselves.
Okay. Okay.
And
great.
That's where it's wrong. And it's bled into common language, and I think for no reason.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, wow. Utilizing methodologies in the same sentence.
We did that deliberately
you
for
did.
You.
I know.
The next one is one that drives me crazy. Ross, you want to do the example?
Okay. Governor Mohamed Zuhair on Friday said that Karachi was the economic hub and a parameter of prosperity.
Parameter? Really?
That's what he said. The Nation magazine.
Parameter of prosperity. Is what he's trying to say, this is something you would measure yourself against? Like, what is he trying to say with parameter there?
I think he's saying it's a boundary.
Oh, I thought a paradigm, maybe.
Boy.
I thought he's saying basically an area around surrounding something. Karachi itself is surrounded by, like a metaphorical or physical boundary, I think, is what he means. That's what the common usage that people use now.
The parameters. Mm. Yeah, I mean, the parameters.
Or characteristic, maybe.
Right. That didn't strike me as what he was trying to say with that sentence. I mean, I think here's the problem, is we don't really know what he was trying to say.
Mm. Or the Nation magazine was actually saying it, quoting him saying it. But yeah, I don't know either.
Technically, a parameter is a mathematical thing, meaning an arbitrary constant, which means nothing to me, or an independent variable.
Mm-hmm.
Precisely. In the quadratic equation function, f of x equals ax squared plus bx plus c, the variable x is the input. A, b, and c are the parameters that determine the shape of the graph.
Do you know, Ross, once upon a time, I actually knew what the quadratic formula was.
Now, oh, yeah. It's like... I remember that one all too well.
Yeah.
But the idea, basically, I think people are getting from that is that the A, B, and C are basically like independent variables that sort of determine, you know, what it looks like. So I guess to me, it seems like people would think it's more boundaries or characteristics, I guess.
Well, do they think it means perimeter?
I don't know.
I'm trying to figure out.
I don't know.
I love the OED had said, non-technical uses of parameter have attracted adverse comment from usage guides in the later 20th century. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I think we should leave this out of our conversation, basically. I would not use the word.
Yeah.
Unless I'm talking about the shape of a graph in a quadratic function, which I never will talk about in my life. So
no, I often do. I do think that people use parameter to mean like a metaphorical perimeter. I really do. Hmm. I think that that's what they're using it as because it sounds almost the same.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay, the next one is used constantly in it's not as much of an idea of a word misusage, but an idea misusage. Schrodinger's cat.
The problem, at least I think, is that people know the concept. Yes, yeah, it was a thought experiment. He didn't do it. Cat in a box. There's poison in the box. If the radioactive substance that is near the trigger mechanism that could open or could start get the poison out decays, the cat dies. If it doesn't decay, the cat lives because the poison isn't dispensed. So before you open the box, you say, is the cat alive or dead? And quantum physics, you say it's both because you don't know what's going on. And that was what Schrodinger was. This is one of those things like for me with moot point. I'm sorry.
This is great.
So Schrodinger was actually trying to demonstrate in his mind that this whole quantum physics concept was ridiculous.
Okay.
He said, it's absurd. The cat cannot be both alive and dead. Uh-huh. The cat is one or the other. So the whole point of the thought experiment was you've got to do this. But now people are saying, lay people in particular, use it as an example, that it could be both alive and dead at the same time. Yeah. And that was exactly what he was trying to disprove. He was trying to say, this arm of science is going down a stupid path.
However, if Schrodinger was wrong, what if quantum theory is completely correct? In that case, the cat could be alive and dead at the same time. So therefore, it could be used correctly in the usage that we're talking about. We could be basically disproving Schrodinger Schrodinger said it one way, but maybe he's wrong.
So maybe Schrodinger is both right and wrong at the same time.
That's the best solution to this whole conversation.
Boy, are we getting
right
quantum
there.
Here.
I know.
I have to just give you my favorite quote. It was Stephen Hawking said, whenever I hear of Schrodinger's cat, I reach for my gun.
Oh, I'm ready for that. But if you get shot, you're either alive and dead or alive and dead. We have to go there too.
I see Schrodinger's cat a lot when people are talking about, a movie or a TV show or something. It's a real Schrodinger's cat situation. And I'm not 100% sure what people think they're saying when they say it, because I don't think they're usually saying it's a situation where it could be both things. It's almost like it's just an unknowable situation or something.
I think that we're a dichotomy or something. Mm, yeah. I don't think most people know what it's talking about, though. I think they know the term, and you see all the memes, and that's it. Yeah.
And the problem, is then that we don't actually know what they're saying when they say that. We don't know what they think it means.
It's going back to moot point, although most people, when they say moot point, do mean something that we both say.
Yeah.
We agree on.
Just not one that is.
Shall
I explain
that? Yeah.
I found this one quote. This one I really got. Like Schrodinger's cat, after taking a moment to compose himself, he ran back in.
Ooh, I love that. That's so weird. I really like that one. What does that mean?
I have no idea. You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.